Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, recovery and community. According to its website, the Recovery Cafe Network, established in 2016, is, quote, comprised of recovery cafes committed to serving people who have experienced trauma and the results of trauma, like homelessness, substance use disorder, addiction, and other mental health challenges using the Recovery Cafe model, end quote. Recovery Cafe Roseway, located in my hometown of Portland, Oregon, is an emerging member of the Recovery Cafe Network. To learn more about recovery cafes and how they work, I sat down and spoke with a member of the Recovery Cafe Roseway's board of directors, Cheryl Seiler.
My name is Cheryl Seiler. I am a member leader at Recovery Cafe Roseway, as well as a member of the board. We have been open since the 30th of March 2023. I joined as a member in the middle of June of 2023. It was kind of a, for me, it was kind of a God shot. When I retired in 21, I had told myself that I was going to go to a recovery meeting a day, giving back, because all during my recovery, I've only been able to go once a week. So what I did was I started going to Eastside Sunrise every morning, 7 days a week. And it was okay, but it wasn't fulfilling. So I tried a couple different volunteer positions. They just didn't quite hit. I drove by here a number of different times and saw the sign that said Recovery Cafe, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, this time to this time, and it, you know, a little curiosity, but nothing really huge. I'm also a member of a church that is in this presbytery, and I'm an elder, and I went to the presbytery meeting as a representative of my church, and Joan Miller, who is the executive director, was giving a presentation at the presbytery, and that's when it hit me that I should go check that out. So within a week of checking it out, I became a member leader. Within 2 months, I was a member of the board. Within 4 months, I had decided that I need to take a step up further. So I started training to be a certified recovery mentor. I'm that, and I'm also a peer support specialist for the state of Oregon. All the things that I didn't think I needed to do when I retired, right? I retired from a totally different business, and to step into this is, it makes my heart sing.
I'm not at all familiar with the concept of a recovery cafe. Break this down for me. What's this about?
Recovery cafe is anybody who defines themselves as being in recovery from anything, whether it's alcohol, drugs, pot, food, self-harm, abuse, houselessness, mental illness. We are here for anybody who identifies as being in recovery from fill in the blank. We are open 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 11 to 5. It is a membership model. So you can come and visit three times and then you can decide whether or not you want to be a member. To be a member, you commit to a recovery circle a week, and I'll get into that in a minute. Walking into the facility drug or alcohol free, and there's no time limit, just drug or alcohol free. And giving back to the community. A recovery circle is a meeting of 8 to 10 people once a week. We meet for an hour, and you just talk about your joys, your challenges, and your goals. And the entire concept is to meet with the same community week after week after week, so your community can give you support and you can support your community. I like to call it an AA meeting with table talk. most AA meetings follow a specific format. We do not. We follow, joys, goals, and challenges. And then if anybody else wants to contribute, hey, I've got an idea for you for your challenge, or may I speak about your joy, that kind of stuff. So the entire concept is community. It's to develop a recovery basis of some place to go and some place to be and some place to give back without whatever it is you're in recovery from, whether it's alcohol, drugs, food, et cetera, et cetera.
So now I am curious, the sober, no alcohol or other drug, not under the influence of alcohol or other drugs when they're here, but say someone slips and they then, a few days later, they're sober, they come in. That's fine.
Okay. That's fine. Yeah,
People slip.
People slip. I mean, it's a reality in today's society that, struggling to remain sober, struggling to remain drug or alcohol free is just that. It's a struggle. And we hope by giving this place to the community that people have a place to come instead of the corner where they're going to go get drugs, or instead of the bar where they're going to go get alcohol. It's someplace to hang and meet other people with the same mindset. All of my friends, I've got 30 years drug and alcohol free. All of my friends are drug and alcohol free, right? The only people who have seen me drunk are my sister and one friend that goes back 35 years. But that's a lifestyle that I've chosen over a number of years, and I didn't know what I didn't know, and that is there's other ways to be in recovery. It's just not AA, NA, OA. It's smart recovery. It's just various different ways that you can get free of drugs and alcohol, but it doesn't have to be God-based or people-based, or rule-based, right? How do I put this?
Dan Big from the Chicago Recovery Alliance defined recovery as basically any positive change. What do you think about that?
I think that is correct. The fact that I have a few years under my belt doesn't mean that I don't rest on my laurels on a regular basis, but giving back is a positive change. Being able to show others that this is possible is a positive change. Walking through issues through my life without doing drugs or drinking is a huge positive change, because that's different than what the way I grew up learning, right? I grew up learning that you don't show your feelings, you drink your feelings. So for me, it's a positive change not to have that alcohol in my hand and to bring my problems and my solutions to my recovery group.
In 35 years, you still define yourself as a person in recovery.
I do define myself as a person in recovery because I choose to help others. And in order to do that, I have to be able to be on their same level, right? I'm not going to help somebody if I cannot connect with them. I'm an alcoholic. If I were to go out and drink again, I doubt I would make it back into these rooms. And so I choose to help others instead of drinking.
For me, stopping the use of alcohol, that part was actually simple. It's more of a health thing. But it's the rest of it. You're saying the issues and such that we weren't dealing with when we just
drank it away.
Not think about that stuff, not worry about those things. And that's the part because that's the part that I did for myself. I mean, when I stopped using alcohol, that's just I stopped using alcohol. But then it took me a minute to realize that and then there's the. So I can either just not deal with that, or I can actually deal with those things. And that's the dealing with those things is the part that I define then as recovery, or that's...
Exactly. You know, I no longer pay the bill that's at the very bottom of the pile, right? That used to be the way I would pay my bills is the oldest was the only one that got paid, because that's when the electricity or the water or the gas was going to get shut off. You know, I no longer do that. I no longer get off work and think, oh, a beer would taste good. Instead, I get off work. Well, I don't work anymore, but, you know, I go home and, you know, I have a Springer Spaniel who is like the epitome of love. You know, you can be gone 5 minutes and you come back in and she's like, you're gone for 5 hours. You know, it's just, that is such a joy that I don't think I would have ever have noticed while I was drinking, because it was all about the drinking. Emotionally, you know, when I quit drinking at 35. I was probably 10 or 11 years old emotionally, and ended up having to go through a lot of ups and downs and emotions and grieving, because I never grieved any of the deaths in my life. Joy, because I graduated from college 39 years after I started, right? And that was fits and starts while I was sober trying to pull my life together. I was able to walk through a death of a spouse. I was able to walk through various deaths of pets and you know, my grandmother, and just, you know, things that normally my way of dealing with would have just been to drink through it. Or it would have been, well, it would still be drink through it, but it would be selfish and self-centered. Oh, feel sorry for me. I lost so-and-so. Or so-and-so's in the hospital. Isn't it bad for me? You know, and these days, it's not about me. It's about how can I help you? And that, I think, is what I lacked when I was growing up. It's what I was not taught empathy when I was growing up, and I've learned empathy over the last probably 15 years, not 30, but 15, because it took that long to get to a point where I could be empathetic with others.
This is my conversation with Cheryl Seiler, a person in long-term recovery and a member of the board of directors at Recovery Cafe Roseway in Portland, Oregon. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The United Nations Social, Humanitarian, and Cultural Committee, also known as the Third Committee, held its sixth plenary meeting of the 79th General Assembly on October 7, 2024. Among the items discussed were transnational crime and international drug control. Here's the Swiss delegate.
Monsieur le Président. Mr. Chairman, Switzerland wishes to take this opportunity of this debate to stress the urgent need for a paradigm shift in drug control and to prioritize human rights and public health over purely repressive measures. Experience and scientific evidence, which has accumulated, clearly shows that repressive approaches and concepts such as the war on drugs, quote-unquote, prohibition, quote-unquote, or a quote-unquote drug-free society have failed. These simplistic ideologies have had numerous negative effects, such as massive human rights violations being perpetrated, the marginalization of certain populations being carried out, prison overcrowding, the exclusion of civil society, and, in far too many states, unfortunately, the frequent application of the death penalty for drug-related offenses. Mr. Chairman, Switzerland welcomes the fact that more and more states are moving away from these outdated approaches and are now implementing pragmatic approaches that provide real solutions to drug-related problems. In Switzerland, we experienced this through the development of our national addiction policy in the 1990s. We moved from an approach centered around control and repression to a four-pillar policy based on prevention, therapy, harm reduction, risk reduction, and regulation, this radical paradigm shift has been a real success. It has led to an improvement in public health, with a massive reduction in overdoses and HIV and hepatitis infections. Furthermore, this evolution has helped to improve the reintegration of persons suffering from addiction and has significantly reduced crime related to drug use. All of this has only been possible thanks to the close engagement of civil society and the persons who use drugs in accordance with the principle of nothing about us without us. At the multilateral level, significant progress has also been made in recent years. In 2016, the General Assembly adopted a resolution on the human rights challenges of the world drug situation. This marked a turning point in the recognition of the importance of scientific evidence and human rights in this area. Similarly, the 2024 session of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs witnessed the historic recognition of the importance of harm reduction in a resolution on overdose prevention, and this reflected a growing consensus on this approach. Numerous United Nations bodies have also recognized the urgent need to refocus our drug policies around human rights and public health. For example, a report was published by the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. This report focused on the human rights implications of drug policy, and the Special Rapporteur had a report on the right to health. This Special Rapporteur issued two reports on harm reduction and the right to health. In view of these various initiatives, Switzerland wishes to recall the importance of the 2018 UN System Common Position. This emphasizes the need for good collaboration between UN agencies to support the implementation of effective drug policies. Chairman, at the General Assembly, we have a responsibility to encourage this paradigm shift at the global level. To achieve this, we call upon member states to implement the following measures. First, to renounce the counterproductive idea of a war on drugs. Second, to recognize the importance of harm reduction. Third, to strengthen collaboration between United Nations agencies. We are convinced that these initiatives will make a significant contribution to effective and humane crime prevention and criminal justice. We will therefore emphasize these points during the negotiations on the omnibus resolution at this session of the Third Committee. Thank you.
That was the Swiss delegate to the United Nations in New York speaking at the 6th plenary meeting of the Social, Humanitarian, and Cultural, or Third Committee, of the 79th General Assembly on October 7th, 2024. Welcome back. Now let's hear more from my conversation with Cheryl Seiler, a person in long-term recovery and a member of the board of directors at Recovery Cafe Roseway in Portland, Oregon. Tell me, what's peer mentoring like?
Peer mentoring is, it's joyful. It really is. And it is, it's emotional. Like I said, when we first started, you know, we're here for anybody who's in recovery from anything. And as a certified recovery mentor, one of the things I get to do is help people set up Gmail so they can figure out how to pay a bill or, you know, even navigate a computer. Some people have never turned on a computer, right? And I'm from the generation where I learned how to work on computers at work. They were able to teach me as I was working. If I had to do it now, I don't think I could. So being able to do that, being able to find someone temporary housing, helping them help themselves, mental illness, helping someone find a therapist, just sitting down and talking with actually sitting down and listening. I think that is the biggest thing that's lacking in a lot of places I go is people not listening to each other. More of a, you know, we're developing what we're going to say next instead of hearing what they said. And most people just want to be heard.
So what's the what's a recovery circle?
So we have a recovery circle per day. And we have a facilitator, and 8 to 10 people are part of that recovery circle, and they are requested to be there once a week. That shows a commitment, and that commitment develops into community. A recovery circle, I'm a facilitator on Tuesdays at 2. There's a recovery circle on Wednesdays at 3 and another one on Thursdays at 2. And there's three of us that are facilitators for those recovery circles. We will start with the Serenity Prayer, the we version, and then go into whoever starts, and then we just go around the circle, you know, What is your joy for the week? What happened this last week that is just fantastic for you, or even just a happy thought? What is your challenge this last week? Did you think about drinking? Did you drink? Did you want to do something different, but you did it anyway, or drug, or you know, whatever you're in recovery from? And then what's your goal for the next week? And it can be as simple as, I want to show up here next week, to as difficult as, I need to finish this test. You know, it's everybody's different, and we're all here to raise each other up. And I think that that's one of the best things about Recovery Cafe, is that we're here to raise others up. Now, Recovery Cafe started in Seattle in 2000, I'm going to get the date wrong, 2006 or 2005, something like that. It's on the website. And we now have 66 recovery cafes across the nation and in British Columbia. And they're all modeled the same way, as in it's, you know, it's a membership model. We provide a specialty drink to anybody who walks through the door, one, and some sort of food. Come in for lunch, you're going to get lunch. Come in the afternoon, you're going to get a snack, or if you want a sandwich, we can help with that. Whatever, you know, food-wise. And it's all gratis. It's not, we're not charging anybody anything. There are no membership fees. The membership model is strictly for accountability and commitment and community. That's the whole point. I've committed to being here Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I'm here Tuesday afternoons, usually from, you know, noon until about 3. And I'm always here on Wednesdays because my circle that I get to attend, not facilitate, is on Wednesdays at 3 o'clock. So from 2 until 3, I am here as a mentor. If anybody needs anything, they can come to me. And from 3 until 4, I'm at a circle.
Gotta ask, you are located in a church. You're not NA, it's not a God model, as you said, but are people ever put off for some people, church was part of the trauma that started everything in the first place?
I don't know the answer to that. I haven't had a whole lot of conversation around the God model. We do unconditional love, right? And part of that is reaching into the spirit within ourselves, which is what I consider unconditional love. I also have a higher power, and you're not it. and I'm not anybody else's higher power. This church chose, as its congregation is declining, it chose to reach a hand out more to the community. It wants to be part of the community. It wants to build more community support. So there's a school, a preschool in the other wing. There is a NA speakers meeting that meets here once a month, 150 to 175 people on Saturday nights. There's a LGBTQ AA meeting. There's a Spanish-speaking meeting. This congregation wants to reach out and be part of the community. Not so much about God, but this is a community place, right? This is for healing.
Let's start with the other let's go to your third commitment, and that is being of service, being a service in the community. I mean, part of that is, as you were saying, volunteering here. What other kind? I mean, yeah, talk to me about that.
Well, I'm going to put in a plug first and say we are always in need of volunteers, and you do not have to be in any kind of recovery program in order to volunteer here. There are a number of people who volunteer that are here just to be part of the community. Giving back. We have Adopt a Block, right? So on Thursday afternoons, one of the members of our volunteer group actually goes around the block with whoever wants to and picks up trash. You can mop the floors, you can sweep, you can water the grass, you know, wipe the tables, do the dishes, or you can become a mentor, you can be a volunteer and help cook in the kitchen, you can man the front desk. The whole point is to get used to giving back, and giving back in that... you know, it goes back to my core value of being able to give away what I was so freely given. That's, you know, bottom line. And if you give back, you feel good, you know. I think that most people want to help. They just don't know how. Until you tell them or ask them, can you fill in the blank? Would you do this or do that? They want to help, but they don't know how. So by saying, you know, give back, give service, we have a sign-up board for doing dishes every day, any day that you're here, right? So you walk in the door and member service, hey, you can do the dishes, you can wipe the tables, you can serve, you can clear, you can do whatever you want. The whole point is being of service to others.
That was my conversation with Cheryl Seiler, a person in long-term recovery and a member of the board of directors at Recovery Cafe Roseway in Portland, Oregon. And for now, that's it. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. A big thanks to my guest, Cheryl Seiler, and the folks at Recovery Cafe Roseway. Many thanks to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it, and you make it all possible. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for Community Radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kboo.fm/freeculture, along with an archive of past shows. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!